Dominique Foxworth, where does this whole story begin?
So Richard Sherman was a college football player, obviously, and he got invited to the Senior Bowl after another player opted out.
Dominique Foxworth is a former NFL defensive back and current writer and commentator for The Undefeated and ESPN.
And he's in a situation just before halftime where Andy Dalton's playing quarterback of the South team, Richard Sherman is playing corner on the North team, and they run a double move. It's only seconds to go before the half, so in that situation, you should stay back, keep everything in front of you, tackle it. Sherman bites on the double move. Receiver gets behind him.
Watch this. This goes to the football. How you supposed to know better? You don't break on anything there. I hate to kill kids for things, but that's so obvious. You could have given up a touchdown to get there.
Sherman actually makes up and kind of breaks up the pass, but he gets to the sideline, and the coach of his team is Marvin Lewis, who is the head coach of the Bengals, and he kind of rips in to Richard Sherman. Because the play that Sherman makes right there, or doesn't make right there, is a pretty dumb one. Like, you don't want to be that aggressive in that moment. So Marvin's kind of telling Richard in some aggressive language that you can't play in the league if you're making dumb plays like that. Marvin Lewis was trying to get Richard to see the whole board. But Richard saw the whole board, and he saw the people behind the board. And he understood that an interception in that moment is much more valuable to him than the cost is of giving up a big play, because he wanted to get people's attention. He gives up a touchdown right there, no one remembers it. He gets a pick right there. A lot of talent scouts are like, hey, he understood that calculus, and he made the decision that he thought was best for him.
The NFL draft is finally upon us. And while there are plenty of question marks tonight, here's a guarantee. Every single team will swear they picked the right guy. But exactly 10 years ago, Richard Sherman fell all the way to the fifth round as teams picked 24 other cornerbacks and then watched Sherman promptly become one of the best ever at the position, on track for the Hall of Fame. Today, Dominique Foxworth explains what Richard Sherman can teach us about what we'll see during these next 3 days of drafting, and everything we won't. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, April 29th. This is ESPN Daily. So it is draft day, Dominique, and before we dive deep into Richard Sherman, one of the greatest characters, one of the greatest defensive players of our time, I do need to reveal something about you. I learned recently that your AIM, AOL Instant Messenger screen name growing up was what?
NFL Bound 36.
When you say that in 2021, how does it feel?
It's embarrassing, I guess, but also bringing up AIM screen names is embarrassing like that. Just alone saying that I had one of those, it was putting up lame rap lyrics as my away messages. Like, that whole construct is pretty embarrassing. So the name itself, I mean, it came to fruition. So I guess I should be proud of it.
Yeah, full disclosure, my AIM screen name was Yoda followed by six digits, and I was also posting rap lyrics as my away message. But the NFL Bound 36-ness of you, I mean, you got drafted in the third round, Dominique, as a defensive back. Richard Sherman was a fifth rounder taken in 2011, exactly 10 years ago this week. I want to know how you decided that you wanted to write about this guy in particular.
Well, I've known Richard for a while, personally, and I've always been impressed with the player that he's become. But I think part of what makes him so interesting to me is that when you look at him or look at his stats on paper, there's nothing about him that seems extraordinary. But his career is absolutely extraordinary. So it's always been a question in my mind, how do players like this succeed in the league? And Richard was the perfect example as we're going into this draft about the importance, I think, frankly, of understanding all of that context when it goes into evaluating and selecting players.
Well, that is the line I want to start with from your piece, because it pains me to say this as your friend and also your antagonist sometimes. It was incredibly smart and true and is not said nearly often enough. And you wrote this: results are context dependent, a fact that is conveniently omitted from the hero's journey story template that we regularly apply to almost every great person in our society. How does that apply to Richard Sherman?
Well, first of all, man, I'm a stellar writer. And second of all, that hero's journey thing, like the flip side of that, we apply that to people who fail also. It's just ironic to me that so often growing up, I would kind of make jokes and laugh at the guy who was working at Foot Locker who said, man, I could have made it. I was this close. And we're like, but you didn't have a backup plan. That's why you landed at Foot Locker. But that same mentality is the same one that we apply to guys who like get injured and then come back. And then all of a sudden they're superstar, Hall of Fame, Pro Bowl cornerbacks. We're like, hey, he had this stick-to-itiveness that just made it work. But it's like, it's the same person. It's just sometimes context changes that situation.
So I want to reverse engineer this here with you, Dominique, because we know now Richard Sherman is a Hall of Famer. He is a person that everybody who knows sports knows about and has an opinion about very likely. But rewinding to the beginning, back before all of the stuff, back to days that I didn't know about, what was his college career at Stanford like?
Yeah, so Richard showed up and he was a receiver for his first 2 years. Not just a receiver, he was the leading receiver for the Stanford Cardinals.
Ostrander again to Sherman, touchdown!
And right now, Richard Sherman, a true freshman, is taking it to the Pac-10 Defensive Player of the Year.
And then he had a knee injury, and he decided to get surgery on that knee injury. The coach there, Jim Harbaugh at the time, he determined that Richard having surgery was tantamount to quitting on the team.
Wait, I don't know. How does that play out? Why is that an opinion?
There's so much about football and football mentality, Pablo, that I need to explain to you that I don't think we have the time to break it down right now. So, yes, that is ridiculous, but it also is not surprising to anyone who's grown up in football culture, as I have. So that happens. And then Richard is moved to defense because the offensive-minded head coach can no longer deal with this player who quit on the team by seeking medical attention. And he plays well at cornerback, but he's not great. He's just learning the position that he hadn't really played seriously.
So first off, I like how you need to explain things to me, but clearly by asking you these questions, I'm making you articulate all the things that I think you're now realizing are even more ridiculous than you thought at the time when you first processed it.
Oh, no. I've known they're ridiculous for quite some time. If you read the piece, under my name, it says Dominique Foxworth, recovering professional athlete in...
What's the rest of it?
Superficial intellectual.
Yeah, see, that's the part I was referring to myself. But hold on here, because Jim Harbaugh is doing this in all of his khakied glory because he does not want to coach Richard Sherman. Is that right? He doesn't want to have this problem child who quit on his team working underneath him.
Right. So I deeply reported and talked to almost everyone involved in this case, except for Jim Harbaugh. So I don't want to jump into his mind and try to say what he is thinking, but I do understand that Richard himself said, and it's been widely reported, that he got moved because he quit on the team.
So what does this do to the perception of Richard Sherman more broadly as this NFL prospect?
Okay, so there's this little anecdote that I put in the piece that Richard Sherman's grade was a 30 out of 100. Hmm. The number one corner coming out that year was Patrick Peterson. His grade was 97 out of 100. So theoretically, you could get three Richard Shermans in the minds of these scouts, and they could not cover as well as one Patrick Peterson. So he was pretty low. And some people believe that it had something to do with the reputation that a respected coach like Jim Harbaugh was kind of pinning on Richard coming into the draft.
So when it comes to the NFL Combine in 2011, this all-important event, the meat market, where all of these guys get poked and prodded and interviewed, there is this informal interview portion of the event that reminds me of like a Miss America contest, but also, yeah, as you write in your piece, is taking place at a train station. What is the deal with this train station?
Okay, so the hotel where the players stay for the Combine used to be a train station. It was called Union Station because all train stations are called Union Station. They normally have scheduled interviews, which is normally reserved for like the top kind of prospects. Richard didn't get any of those, which is unsurprising, but then they have like a kind of speed dating situation where you just hang out in a big conference room and coaches come and grab you and ask you some questions. Richard stood there for the entire interview period and no one spoke to him. No one interviewed him. The only conversation he had that night was with Chris Richard, the DB coach for the Seahawks. And Chris told me, and he made it very clear, that it wasn't an interview. He just saw Richard over there. He remembered Richard because Richard was the receiver who converted a 4th-and-20 against Chris Richard's USC Trojans that led to the biggest upset by point spread in college football history up until that point. So Chris remembered Richard from that. So he went over and he just kind of struck up a conversation. And I guess Richard was feeling a little bit contemplative in this moment. And Chris Richard said the conversation got deep fast. Neither of them wanted to tell me exactly what they talked about, but it was such an important conversation that neither of them ever forgot about it.
Yeah, you've now described almost like a bizarro meet and greet from like 90 Day Fiancé, I'm realizing. And so there is this small talk phase that ends up being pivotal. Like, this is something that Sherman not only never forgets, but it kind of ends up shaping him in some way.
Yeah, so him and Chris Richard are still friends, and they will be forever in life. And when you talk to either of them about their time in Seattle, when they built the Legion of Boom, quite possibly the best defense the NFL has ever seen, they talk about each other and they talk about everyone as if everyone is of equal importance. The reverence that they have for each other, the love, frankly, that they all have for each other is something special. So as much as I ridicule some of the stupid things about football culture that I grew up being a part of, like, I miss and envy those type of connections because I just don't care about my coworkers the way I used to.
Yeah, I get that feeling. I really do. And so coming up, my coworker, who I care deeply for, brings me back to Richard Sherman's arrival at the ground floor of the Legion of Boom.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Dominique, I need you to take me into Richard Sherman's mind as the draft is getting underway, because he's already annoyed an NFL head coach at the Senior Bowl and nobody seemed especially interested in him at the Combine. So what was his draft day experience like?
Richard's was particularly painful. His parents, he said, maxed out the credit cards and like put themselves in a tough financial situation to fly 40 or so people to Las Vegas to watch the draft in a hotel room. The first night, first round, Richard's like, he knows he's not going first round, but everyone's in there partying. Most of them don't know much about what's going on, but they know they love Richard. So after every single draft pick in the first round, there's like an audible aww. Disappointed. Like they're expecting his name to be called. And he's sitting there like, okay, whatever. Then day two comes up and his agent calls him before the draft starts on day two. And his agent is like, well, the Patriots are deciding between you and one other corner. They draft the other corner. Mm. And so then Richard sits there with less than 40 people today saying, aw. And so then the third day comes up and Richard says at this point there's no one left but his cousin, his mom, his dad, and his girlfriend at the time. All the other people have found something else to do. I don't know if they're gambling, they're at the buffet, or they've gone back to LA, but it's just them there. And again, there's some awes, but eventually he gets a call from John Schneider, who is the GM of the Seahawks.
With the 154th selection in the 2011 NFL draft, Seattle Seahawks have selected Richard Sherman.
And Richard said, there's celebration, like everyone's screaming and celebrating. And he is pissed.
Yeah, it feels like if you were to take that scene and you were to keep zooming in and zooming in, like right into the skull of Richard Sherman, like outside there is joy, inside it sounds like there was a furnace that had already begun to sort of like forge the vision that he had for how he was going to get back at everybody.
Oh yeah, I imagine that zooming in to Richard Sherman's mind in that moment, I see a tiny little Richard Sherman who is very, very angry, just sitting there seething. But there's a funny little anecdote that didn't make it into the story is they gave him number 30 and they drafted a safety a couple picks after him. And they gave that safety number 25. Richard said he called the equipment guys and said, I was drafted before them. I take 25. It's no way I'm going out there and that stank ass 30. So history could have been totally different. We could be looking at Richard Sherman number 30 going into the Hall of Fame, or maybe the stankness of number 30 might have kept him from ever reaching his true glory.
So why is it, Dominique, that John Schneider, the GM, and Pete Carroll, the head coach, why did they want Richard Sherman? What were they trying to build in Seattle?
Pete Carroll was really high on competition. He wanted everyone to compete at all times. And Richard Sherman fit that mold. You could see they wanted guys who had been through something, who had persevered in some way. And it was prior to the time when grit was like a terminology that we all understood and used, but they wanted players with grit and guys who had overcome different things in different situations and were willing to fight for whatever they wanted. And that happened literally and figuratively quite often in those locker rooms and on that practice field.
Wait, so take me into that locker room, take me onto that practice field. What was this environment like for young Richard Sherman?
Yeah, I think it feels like home because he's hungry to learn. Like, remember, he's only been a cornerback for 2 years. Chris Richard points out that he was behind in a lot of ways, technically, and as far as understanding the position. So he's hungry to learn, but he's also hungry to prove his spot. And I think I could relate to Richard and understanding that in that situation, you know that people are getting cut. You're watching people get cut every day. And you're like, it ain't gonna be me. And if you have to physically fight someone, if you have to jump a route in a situation, like you are willing to do anything like that to hold on to what's left of this dream that you've had your entire life. So you understand how desperate you might be in that moment. And then you also combine that with what you think of Richard Sherman. I can't imagine what they were dealing with trying to keep him contained in those moments.
How distinct is what that locker room felt and sounded like to you versus just your understanding of how NFL locker rooms are like in general? What made that distinct and special on that level?
Oh, it was ruthless and honest, which Richard really liked. I think the thing that makes that really special is that they all understood. Like, it was all fair, and it doesn't feel like there was any animosity or disappointment or frustration. So there was a couple years in, Doug Baldwin, their really great receiver, was undrafted, and he came in the same year as Richard Sherman. They both came from Stanford. They were in there trying to prove themselves. Doug became the number one receiver on that team as a rookie, an undrafted rookie, and Richard became the best corner as a fifth-round rookie. And they fought. They loved each other from college. They loved each other as teammates, but they fought time in and time out. And there was one specific occasion a couple years in where they fought. And Doug, when I talked to him, told me he still has the scar on his face to prove it. And there were no hard feelings afterwards. I read interviews from both of them after that particular practice. And they were just like, essentially, to paraphrase, it bees like that sometimes.
Dominic, you once, we were doing TV one day, you picked me up. You sort of like, I attest that you cracked my ribs. I have not forgiven you for that. To me, it does not be like that. Like, that's the difference between football and the world of journalism that you now inhabit.
I was trying to heal you. You said your back was tight. I was cracking the tightness out.
Yeah, your chiropractor's degree, not on the bio that I had read at the bottom of this article.
It was a win-win for me. Either I heal you and we're friends forever, or I take out some competition.
So Richard Sherman, Dominique, he ends up playing against his old head coach from Stanford, who now happens to be in the NFC West, who just happens to be the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh. So how would you describe their dynamic in the NFL?
honest. Like, Richard's very honest about how he feels about what Coach Harbaugh did and said to him in college. But I guess looking back, maybe Coach Harbaugh did him a favor, because I don't know that Richard would be a Hall of Fame receiver. But anyway, there's no love lost, I think, is what people like to say in these situations. Richard said explicitly that he wanted to run him out of the league. And he succeeded in doing so in his mind by keeping him out of the Super Bowl in that NFC Championship game, because he made the play that ended that game.
Kaepernick, end zone, Crabtree. Broken up, picked off. This game is over. Knocked in the air, intercepted by Smith. Off the hands of Richard Sherman.
So I want to get to that NFC Championship game, Dominique. It is the Seahawks. It is the 49ers. It is infamous. Not for what happened, which was glorious at the end of the game, which you just described, but what happens afterwards when he has an interview with Aaron Andrews.
Richard, let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Who was talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm going to shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
All right, before...
What is it, Dominique, that people misunderstood, as you see it, about that moment?
Richard, again, was being honest and authentic. Like, that is what football feels like. That is authentically football in that moment. And he was right. Crabtree was talking trash all week, and he shut him down in that moment. And I think so many of us players and people in media have this expectation that guys are going to be phony, because guys are phony all the time.
Yes.
And then when you get a guy being real, it feels uncomfortable. That was real. That is the same thing he would have said, or he probably did say, when he walked up to Crabtree and tried to shake his hand immediately after that game. That is what he was saying with that gesture. And he said it to America. And I mean, I personally appreciated it then, and I appreciate it now when players do it.
And for the record, like, someone else who appreciated it as part of, like, the spirit of competitive high-level sports was Aaron Andrews, who then went on to say that she thought it was awesome. In retrospect, like, it clearly was something that everybody remembers, and now I think, like, hopefully can sort of celebrate looking back.
I mean, who cares if everyone wants to celebrate it or not? We can celebrate it. Richard can celebrate it. Aaron can celebrate it. Like, that is the cornerback in me. It's like, I don't care if it's an overthrown ball. Incomplete pass? We are dancing, Pablo.
So we now obviously know Dominique. We know Richard Sherman as this cocky but transcendent player, a Super Bowl champion, a 3-time first team All-Pro, a 5-time Pro Bowler. And he has this reputation as a big talker, a brash talker. But how did those traits affect how Richard Sherman got perceived back when he was younger, back when he was a prospect?
Yeah, I think people have these kind of pre-existing archetypes, specifically of black players and specifically of cornerbacks. Richard Sherman is a dreaded cornerback from Compton. It was not much of a leap for people to assign characteristics to him as, like, impulsive and brash and arrogant. And those things are not completely untrue, but I think what is more true about Richard is he's honest. That's the thing that I found most about talking to all these Seahawks people, is there is an honesty that they ascribe to, and it's painful sometimes, but it's always honest. So when Richard decided he wanted to be his own agent and represent himself in free agency, he was ridiculed, but he honestly believed in himself and he could do it. He did just fine with that. The same thing is true of when he got into some trash talk with Tom Brady. And at all these moments, I just remember everyone looking at Richard, not everyone, but a lot of prominent people in media specifically looking at Richard and judging him and doing a similar thing to what Marvin Lewis was doing and kind of saying, hey, young man, that ain't gonna work. But Richard was seeing the game bigger than that, and he was being truthful about the things that he saw, and it's worked out pretty well. Not only has he been a Hall of Fame player, I think he set himself up for quite a great media career afterwards if he wants to. So Richard is one step ahead once again.
But hold on. In terms of honesty, Dominique, can you be that honest if people don't think you're actually that good?
No, like, that goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. the dude at Foot Locker, who is being completely honest, like, man, I would have made it if I didn't tear up my knee. And we all roll our eyes at them, but the sentiment is no different from what we see from the guys who are at the top of their game.
All right, up next, the lessons we should learn from Richard Sherman's NFL trajectory and how that applies to what we'll see tonight.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Dominique, as a fellow DB, as a cornerback, when you watch this guy, just from a purely football standpoint, what makes him so good? What do you admire personally in his game as someone who did this same job?
I think much is made of his intelligence, and that is admirable. He can read defenses. If he sees what the number 2 is doing, he can guess what the number 1 is doing before he does it. And he'll use all those hints to get himself in position to get an interception. But I think the more difficult part, it goes back to his conviction, is he believes it. When he sees something, he believes it and jumps it. And I think that that's the toughest thing. Because as a cornerback, if something goes wrong, everyone sees it. It's a touchdown. Everyone sees it and you are the scapegoat. And no matter whether you walk to the sideline and say, but I saw number 2 go flat, that means number 1's likely going to curl or go in. Coaches don't care. When you're in a post-game press conference and you're like, hey, but it looked like a flood concept, so I sat on it. That's why I got beat there. Like, the fans and the media aren't going to be like, oh, but the logic works out, so he's cool. Like, to have the confidence and the conviction, frankly, to see those opportunities and then also capitalize on them, like, that to me is what's most impressive.
So when you take a step back, Dominique, and you survey the field, you survey society, what does the way that Richard Sherman's reputation has been built, what does it tell you about us, about the world that was so quick to label him in all of these ways?
Yeah, I think that we are lazy. If you give us 1 or 2 clues, we're going to go ahead and run off and say, oh, you're just like this guy. You're just like that guy. Also, as GMs try to build rosters, I think they should understand that what Richard told me, I asked him, what would he be looking for if he was looking for a player like him? And he said, mentality. And that's an interesting thing, because we kind of look back at players after they've had success, and then we go and say, it's because of this mentality that they had, which is not always true. But I think it's absolutely true for Richard and that Legion of Boom defense. And I think evidence to that is that you look at the Bears, 85 Bears, best defense of all time, or the 2000 Ravens are also considered one of the best defense of all time. Mm-hmm. All but 4 of their players were drafted in the top 38. You look at the Seahawks, they had 2 players drafted in the top 38, which both were first rounders. One drafted at 47 in the second round, and the rest of the guys were late round guys or undrafted. So, like, that's mentality. It's no way that, no disrespect to John Schneider, it's no way that he found all these ballers deep in the draft. Like, that was about mentality and about the situation more than it was about any individual player.
Does Richard Sherman, Dominique, does he see context in the way that you have laid out. Because the other part of him that you also dive into is his confidence, right? His conviction, this idea that he is better than the world understands. Does he understand how much all of this success was interlocking factors as opposed to just one great man powering his way through history?
I think his conviction and his confidence, I kind of separated in some ways, because he also said he thinks he would have been successful elsewhere, but he recognized that it would have been slim. I think it's more in the conviction in his methods than it was in the conviction of the outcome. I believe that Richard believed that I'm going to do what I do. And no matter what happens at the end, I'm comfortable with that. And that kind of takes us back to that first decision that we talked about on that play and the Senior Bowl. Is he knew the situation. He knew that's not what you should do right there. He knew what the potential results were, and he had come to terms with that. And I think that's what I am most impressed about. Not the confidence, because like we said, like a lot of people are confident and end up wearing a referee's jersey, slinging shoes. But Richard had conviction in his methods, which I think is, frankly, at least in this case, better than the confidence.
So it occurs to me that the other thing about context, about luck, is that it can sort of muddy and distort responsibility and how we apportion it, but it can also be poetic, Dominique. And you chose to end your piece by going full circle to that Senior Bowl in 2011, connecting back to the story you told us at the very top with Marvin Lewis warning Richard Sherman that he'll never make it in this league. You connect all of that to a game I had totally forgotten, but Richard Sherman clearly didn't. What happens in the very first start of Richard Sherman's NFL career?
So there was a series of injuries that led Richard to getting this start. As luck would have it, he's facing the Bengals, who their quarterback is Andy Dalton, the guy who threw that pass in the Senior Bowl that got him chewed out. The coach of that team is the man who did the chewing, Marvin Lewis. And the receiver that he is lined up against in the third quarter of that game is AJ Green, a guy who was drafted fifth overall, like 140 some odd spots ahead of Richard Sherman. Richard is in press coverage, and they run a converted fade type go route, which is the exact route that they brought Richard Sherman to Seattle to cover.
Dalton, at the right sideline, intercepted! Richard Sherman was right there!
He flips his hips, jumps up, snatches the interception, and goes down. He hops up immediately and starts bouncing down the Bengals sideline, talking trash. I don't know what he's saying. It doesn't matter. You can tell that it is very disrespectful towards the Bengals bench. He flips the ball at their sideline and starts bouncing backwards towards his own with his eyes on them the entire time.
Dominique Foxworth, journalism bound 36, as they call you on this podcast. Thank you for joining me.
It doesn't have the same ring to it. It's not good. I don't like it.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.